It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer, the only podcast for Notre Dame fans by Notre Dame fans. If you're looking for cogent analysis and unbiased opinions backed by careful reporting, you've come to the wrong place. For the next 20 minutes or so, you'll get a fan's perspective on the Fighting Irish without all the normal spin from the so-called professional analysts. It's Dome and Domer. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer.
My name's Mike Brammer. Joining me tonight, Ed Jordanic, as always, and from NDNation.com, Mike Coffey. Ed, I'm going to start with you. I'm going to make a prediction here, and I want you to correct me where I'm wrong, but I think there's a chance that, number one, Notre Dame wins out and wins their bowl game. And the reason I'm saying that is based on past previous experience myself. I was a high school quarterback, as you know. You and I went to the same high school. My senior year, the very worst game I ever had, I threw four interceptions in one game. And the reason why is it was a torrential downpour the entire game. And it just completely messed with me. I couldn't put it behind me. I just dominated every thought during the game. I wanted no part of being out there. I hated it. I couldn't get past the fact that I was 5'10". I didn't have a big, huge arm. So I couldn't like just wing it. And the entire game, I was just focused on nothing but playing in lousy rain. I think that's what happened Saturday night, is my gut instinct. I really think Book let it get to him. It got inside his head. He's not going to sit back and throw it 60 yards. He doesn't have that kind of an arm. So it allowed Michigan to just put everybody up, knowing that nobody was going to beat him deep. And I think it put us in a bind, and I think it just had a lot to do with the mentality of the team. I don't think it explains giving up 45 points, but it was 17-7 with 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. We were still in the game as bad as we were playing, but I just don't think it was his night to get beyond the fact that it was those kind of conditions, and with that, he's totally marginalized in a situation like that. Where am I wrong?
Well, I don't know if you're wrong. I mean, you also had Sullivan as one of your wide receivers, so that was part of your problem.
Oh, dearie. I'm learning so much on how this podcast works. This is very educational.
I mean, you know, listen, it was raining for Shea Patterson, too, but obviously his offensive line created some room for Charbonnet and for another running back nobody had even heard of until Saturday. Book sort of seemed to me to having to see even
I don't think he agrees.
Yeah, even my dog Zeke is pissed off about this whole thing.
That's an angry.
You know, yeah, he's no, but you know, I mean, but Book had many of the same issues that he's had all year, rain or no rain, in terms of throwing to the right guy, not staying poised in the pocket. There was a little bit of everything that went wrong, from, you know, taking the ball to start the game, which I thought was crazy in weather like that, to, getting, you know, absolutely no sort of help for the passing game because of unable to run the ball more than a yard, forward at any given moment in the game. And then, you know, you talk about the 17-7 and still in it. And, as a result of that gift PI penalty against Michigan, and I'm thinking to myself, this could end up being the greatest thing ever. We're going to come back and win this game, and Michigan's fans are going to be red-assed about this pass interference call for the next 15 years. But what didn't happen is the defense didn't step up, and, you know, they got gashed, and that really, really felt like, you know, Brian Van Gorderland, where every single time in a certain period of Brian Kelly's tenure that we garnered any momentum or drove for a touchdown, you know, we immediately gave up a long drive or a big chunk play for a touchdown to the other team. We never sort of built on any positive momentum. So, you know, there's so much to point to. You know, nobody made plays. I mean, I don't know if any of the senior captains' names were called the whole night, you know, besides for bad things like Gilman's pass interference and, you know, other stuff. I mean, Aquara was invisible. You know, Kareem was invisible. You know, Book played poorly. you know, it was just, you know, they were ill prepared. There was just so much wrong, that now you're really left wondering, is this going to be a November of, you know, of riding the ship in 10 and 2, like you just alluded to, Mike, or is it going to be, a fall apart?
I think that's going to be the tell. Yeah. I mean, I think we all know what we're looking at. It's one or the other. Either this was an aberration and we do get by this and we play really well and we win our ball game, or this turns into a November that we'll want to forget. I don't think that's going to happen, but I don't know, Coffee. I mean, certainly going into that, there's nobody on this call that thought that that was a possibility going in.
Not at all.
A 45-14.
And all of the various bottles of liquor I owe to my friends, because I said there's absolutely no way Notre Dame is losing this game, and the picks that I made and the various contests and stuff like that, for me, it boils down to one very crucial thing. We had no game last week. We had fall break last week. There was no game. There was no classes. And this is what we saw. And I'm completely poleaxed as to how this could possibly happen, because every facet of the game broke down. I mean, I'm inclined to say the defense had a good second quarter and a good part of the third quarter. Mike, you talked about how we were only down 17-7. But I have to ask myself, how many times, if the defense watching all of these three and outs after they work so hard to get the ball back, and then three awful plays on offense, punt, and they're back on the field, how much?
It mentally drains on you. It does. It mentally drains on you because you feel like, no, it doesn't matter what we do, we're not going to get anywhere closer. And I think it does have a huge impact on the overall team. Now, back to your point.
The other part of it is we have a body of work so far in the first half of the season that has shown the defense has played very, very well in tough situations. The onus has been put on them, and they've stepped up in many games. So the fact that they had a tough game this time, I'm more inclined to believe that they got beaten down because of that, because I can look back at the previous games and say, oh, look how well they played in all these games. The offense, on the other hand, this is the same Ian Book we've seen for the last couple of weeks, just getting happy feet in the pocket, not seeing the open receivers downfield. And if we're going to assign blame, and you know me, I'm more apt to assign blame to the coaching staff than anyone else, I would look at the offensive side more than the defensive side.
Yeah. Well, I think that so the one thing that did surprise me is, as you mentioned, you know, we did have arguably 2 weeks to prepare for this, and one of them was no distractions with classes. So what we didn't see was any kind of adjustments made, whether they were pregame, like stuff that we saw on film, or during the game adjustments that we made, at least that I could tell. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that I know exactly what we're doing in terms of technique and strategy and of what kind of adjustments we made during the game. But it just seemed like on a lot of the previous games, you could see visibly where we did make some adjustments. Or you could see a total turning point in the second half, i.e. like
especially.
Louisville. Yeah, especially on defense. In the first half, I I'm going to have to go back and look at this because I've yet to look at the game again. But, boy, I could swear there were three times where three of our defensive linemen were absolutely untouched, but yet they went the completely wrong way or were frozen once they got past the line of scrimmage and then couldn't recover. And it just seemed odd to me because I was like, I haven't seen that. Like, where's that coming from? Now, a lot of times you just guess wrong with your slants, right? And you slant the wrong way and you're out of position. But in these cases, it looked like they were taking advantage of our aggressiveness, and the offensive line for Michigan was just letting them go. Like, all right, you're out of the picture. And I think it put a lot more pressure on our linebackers. Overall, I thought that Michigan did a much better job of attacking our linebackers and getting them out of the play immediately. And that's why I think we didn't see like some huge linebacker play is because Michigan was really damn effective in getting out and reaching them without having to worry about doubling down on the defensive line, which is kind of weird to say that in light of everything that we saw. I got to go back and watch because I'm just doing this off of my first memory, and I kind
of. You're actually going to watch that a second time on purpose?
I just don't know. I haven't come to it yet. I don't think I'm going to, but I don't want to be called fake news either, so I might have to go back and look.
Hey, better you than me, brother.
But, I mean, Ed, did you think, I mean, I don't know what to point to in terms of stuff that was there that just didn't work. Now, Coffey made mention of a couple missed receivers. I mean, obviously, Komet on that one was wide open deep. But, I mean, again, I just think that in a rain like that, you're not going to see Book air it out deep. I don't know.
I didn't like them taking the ball to start the game. But I also think that when you basically are just absolutely, you know, they have not, you know, they've had two games this year against, teams that, I think that you'd want to be measured against and have not been able to run the ball at all, really, against either of them or with any consistency or any effectiveness. So whether that's just the offensive line or whatever, Tony Joe, whatever you want to attribute it to, especially in weather like that, you've got to be able to at least get a first down or two. You've at least got to be able to get, you know, some chains moved a little bit, try and win the field position game. I mean, they lost the field position game. Mike Coffey's right. The defense basically, you know, neither team did much in the second quarter. I think you put your quarterback in a tough position when you can't move the ball at all on the ground. And then when you also have a quarterback who just is, who's not executing well and not seeing the field well and, not able to sort of get out of his own way several times. It was just a bad mashup on offense. And I don't know enough to know if the scheme and the game plan was poor going in. I don't know if it was altered because of the weather at all. I actually thought, there weren't, with the exception of that, the fumbleitis on the punt, and a couple other little things, I thought the ball security for both teams was actually pretty good. And I didn't think that the weather sort of, at least on television, I'm sure was incredibly difficult to play in, but I thought, you know, both teams handled it, well. Michigan just handled it much better just because of their ability to dominate the line, both lines of scrimmage. The stat I saw today was Pete Sampson at the Athletic, you know, measures the percentage of times that Book is pressured on a passing down, and it was the highest. It was almost 50%, which was the highest in every single game this year. So obviously he was feeling the heat, and he also, you know, really had no sort of running game to get to third and four, to get to third and three, to get to third and two. It was third and nine, third and 10, third and 12, third and nine, third and 10, third and 11. And, and he also sort of, you know, made some poor decisions. And when he did scramble, you know, he didn't get very far because Michigan's got a pretty damn good defense with a really good coordinator that were really well prepared. And there was just not much we could do.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely were well prepared for this game. You know, the one thing that has been a little bit of a sore spot for this team this year is their uncanny timing for getting penalties to go against them in crucial times. You know, Coffey, on that first drive, you know, here we are at midfield. I can't remember what the break was that we caught, whether it was a penalty on Michigan that gave us a first down. But then immediately, on the very next play, Cole Kmet is running in the backfield and the ball snapped and hits him. Book's got a dive on it. And then the next play after that, we're called for procedure and it's back another 5 yards. We're literally 10 yards back, third and 20 after those two plays.
Yeah, and it's just so frustrating for any fan to watch because this is supposed to be a quality unit. And you see that they're making the kind of mistakes that people in high school shouldn't be making, and it all gets back to how much time do they have to prepare for this, and then you see the kind of play they're putting out there and the kind of mistakes they're making, and you wonder what they spent the last 2 weeks doing. I mean, I know what they spent the last 2 weeks doing. They were practicing and stuff like that, but I don't know. Did they go into this game thinking they had it in the bag? Did they? It reminded me a lot of Miami 2 years ago, which, I mean, we were all told was a glitch, and Brian Kelly 2.0 is supposed to not do this, but here we go again, seeing that. So it's frustrating for me frustrating for any Notre Dame fan because it was raining on both teams. Both teams had their time to prepare, and it's just Michigan looked so much more ready, and so many unforced errors on Notre Dame's side where you kind of sit back and say, you know, what was the plan? When you watch a game and you can't really tell what the plan was, you have to wonder what was going on the last couple of weeks.
I don't remember I don't remember anybody, you know, with the exception of Bo Bauer, kind of looking like they were freaking jacked to play Michigan on the road in prime time. I just don't, you know, it was sort of surreal. It was, you know, it was really sort of painful. You know, the defense when we did, and maybe they were worn out by this point because, like you guys said, they were on the field a lot, you know, in the first half and the second quarter especially. But to start the third quarter or in the middle of third quarter, whenever we scored, you know, Michigan got the ball back and they gashed us and took it right down. And then, you know, one of the hallmarks, unfortunately, is that of this era, this kind of Brian Kelly era, is that we just, you know, one of the reasons we had success against Michigan last year is we shook Patterson up. He's kind of a rhythm quarterback. He's kind of has to have a feel for the game. And we put him on the ground a couple times and hit him a couple times. And we just never made him pay at all on Saturday. And we still just do not get to the quarterback. We don't close that gap fast enough to either hit him as he's releasing the ball. And the one time we did, it was too late, and he made a terrific play, and that's how they went up 24-7, right? I mean, wasn't that after their long run?
Yep.
And, you know, he got people's in the end zone, and just a split second earlier, that ball would have been so off target, it might have gotten picked off and taken all the way the other way. You think about that, how that is thrown out into the flat or into the corner of the – or into just over the goal line or into the back of the end zone. We had, what, three guys there around the ball? And if that ball is just a little bit off target, you know, we may just start running the other way with it. But we just were a millisecond late to get to him. And sometimes college football is a game of inches or even less.
Then I think, you know, the emotion of it. If you look at just, you can't sit here and blame one side or the other, where it's offense or defense. I certainly am not going to, you know, with the score being 17-7, like you said, and that's a perfect example of how close the plays are. Because if we do get to them a little bit early, I think you're right. I think that ball flutters. We probably pick it off. The emotion starts to change. You know, I mean, all that changes. Instead, they score a touchdown. You're now down 24-7.
And you've ruined any momentum that you just had.
You ruined any momentum. And I guarantee you, there weren't a lot of guys on the defense saying to themselves, you know what, it's okay. If we hold them, Book's going to bring us back. The offense is going to score.
No, that was a game where we needed a defensive touchdown. The other thing is that I was so annoyed that nobody pointed this out on the telecast. But, you know, Bo Bauer gets his hand on that punt. The ball is rolling. And not only does Jones touch it, which was bad enough, but then Braden Lindsey comes along and tries to pick it up. So we not only, you know, he had a chance to fall on it after Jones touched it for the first time, which of course was bad. But Lindsey is basically hovering right over the ball, and he reaches down to pick it up instead of just falling on it. So that was huge too. And all those little mistakes in a game like that, in weather like that, you know, they change the complexion of a game. And obviously we weren't ready to play, but maybe if suddenly we have the ball first down on their 32-yard line, you know, after that punt is hit, maybe at least we put some points on the board. Start feeling a little bit better about ourselves. But man, we just there was, you know, it really looked like, you know, on the sidelines that Kelly was befuddled. That he just didn't know what he had. He was just like, we have not, you know, we just didn't show up.
Yeah, I think he was. I mean, you could see it on his face, especially there in the second half. I mean, he just would look up at the scoreboard like, I cannot believe what's going on.
And you can almost tell that it's taking every ounce of self-control for him not to throw these guys under the bus. Like, he just wants to rip them in public so hard. And to his credit, you know, he's not doing that anymore. Or he's showing a little bit more self-control, and he's taking a little bit more, accountability.
Maybe he should.
Yeah. But, man, you just had the feeling that...
What do you think? Looking ahead here, what's your gut instinct now? I mean, you got Virginia Tech's 5-2. They're actually decent. They're not a bad football team. This isn't one you can come out and just go through the motions.
No, absolutely true. But I think if you look at the rest of November, these are all teams that either haven't necessarily had good years or are performing under where you thought they were. I mean, yeah, Virginia Tech's 5-2, they also got completely railroaded and blown off the field at Duke. So, you know, I don't think anyone on the schedule in November should pose nearly the threat that the Georgias and SCs and Michigans of the schedule did. I mean, on paper, Notre Dame should run the table, as you said at the beginning of the podcast, run the table, win the bowl game, and then go into next year and see what happens. But I fear with our offensive execution, it's not going to be as easy as that sounds. I think it concerns me that we knew Ian Book went into the season saying, well, let's see if we can get the ball downfield. Not only are we not getting the ball downfield, we're not getting the ball down in short against quality opposition either. So, and I understand why they want to stick with Book rather than putting Djurkovic in there. I think Djurkovic's got a lot of physical tools. They feel that Book gives them the best chance to win the game. Okay, fine, that's their decision to make, but they're going to be held to that decision because the best case scenario for this season is 11-2 with a bowl win, and numerically you can say, oh, they went 11-2 and all that, but then if you actually watch the games and look at how they did, it's the deeper you dig into the statistics, the worse it looks.
Well, it'd be tough to go against an 11-2 team, I think. I mean, I think we all were saying it's between 11-1 and 10-2 this year as the likely outcome.
True, but
the season played out a little bit differently. I agree with you. The interesting thing on Djurkovic is I do think that, look, I kind of believe that Book is going to be on a much tighter, shorter leash now.
Yeah, I agree.
That's for sure. I don't see him going out against Virginia Tech in the first two series going 3-and-out and staying in the game. I really don't. So I think Book's under a little bit of pressure here. I think he will respond. But I also agree that I just think the coaching staff is smart enough. They're going to put out there who they think gives us the best chance of winning. And if that's the case, that's who they're going to play. But if Book goes out there and goes 3-and-out and we're ineffective in the first half, I mean, I got to believe you're going to see him in the second half for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if it's 14-3 at halftime and they have less than 100 total yards, you know, I think you very well could see a change. And deservedly so. You know, if the standard is who's going to help us win, well, you know, if you're going nowhere fast, you know, you've got to put in the backup quarterback, regardless of what you've, you know, of how big the gap may be, because you're in danger of losing the game. And the number, you know, the key piece to the puzzle is the quarterback. And if the execution is there, you know, especially if we're still unable to run the ball with any consistency, you know, we may well see. But I think they've got to handle this way. You know, they've got to this is one of those deals where, you know, Djurkovic obviously isn't going to win the job in practice, and there's not enough of a sample size to have him win the job because of game performance. So they're going to leave it up to Book to either keep it or lose it.
I think so. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. And I kind of think Book will respond, you know, as long as the conditions are good Saturday. I think he's going to, because he's at his best when he has the ability to scramble a little bit. He's shown the ability to run at the right time. He has been a little bit happy with that. I totally agree. I think he's just a little bit too much leaning that way. And he's probably got to trust his feet a little bit more to stay in the pocket and maybe even take a sack every now and then here and there, if in fact, you know, it gives him a little bit more comfort feeling of staying in there. But I don't know. I do think that what we saw Saturday is not what we're going to get this Saturday. I think the Irish will come out. I think they'll execute. I think they will win the game. And I think we'll perform way better than what we saw on Saturday night.
I would certainly hope so. But my only issue is the things we've been talking about, the way Ian Book is performing. And I, as an alumnus, I hate to dig on players like that. But this is the same stuff we've been seeing all year so far. Just the happy feet in the pocket, the missing the open receivers and stuff like that. I want to say, with the lowered level of competition in November, hopefully he'll find his feet, he'll really get himself together, and it'll be the Ian Book we saw last year. But I just wonder what happens if we don't see that, and we're looking at, you know, as you said, if it's 14-3 at halftime and the game's in question, Brian Kelly's got a deep decision to make here, because it's like there's a lot of stories this week about how, well, you know, Phil needs just a little bit more on like judging defenses and stuff like that to really be ready. Well, that time may come sooner than they want, and if it does, I'm not quite sure what's going to happen.
Well, I think it's fascinating. It'd be fascinating to be embedded with this team this week, because, you know, back in the day, you get embarrassed like that against a rival, and it is a ugly ass week of practice. I mean, Mike knows this. You guys know this. I mean, whether it's basketball or football, you get embarrassed in a big game, or you don't show up, and everybody's running on Monday. And every single drill that you absolutely hate are the ones that the coaches put you through on Tuesday. And, you know, in other words, you're punished. You're punished for not performing. And you either come out and are mentally tough, and the next week you really put a hurting on somebody because you play with a chip and you're as pissed off as your coaches are at you. But I don't know if these kids can be coached like that these days. I don't know if that happens anymore. I don't know if they just have to come out.
That's a good question.
They just go right into game planning, and it's almost like they just got to, you know, it's kind of like nothing happened. And, you know, I mean, are there any consequences for laying an absolute egg like that? So I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. I'm going to really be interested in sort of what kind of intensity they play with on Saturday. What kind of do they play with sort of, you know, sort of like a real chip and hit and get after people. And, you know, maybe there'll be some execution issues. Maybe there'll be a little bit of sloppiness at certain points, but there'll be no questioning, you know, the fight. And that's what I'm going to be paying most attention to, because if there is that and they win the game, and you can see that they haven't, that they aren't soft, and that they haven't sort of, you know, mailed it, you know, or sort of on an edge of sort of going south on the staff, you know, then I think, you know, sort of completing the schedule without losing again is not just possible, it's probable. But boy, if they struggle and they look soft and they're not able to get any push on the line, and they're not all over swarming on defense and, you know, forcing some bad plays by Virginia Tech, then, you know, there's no reason why every single team left on their schedule can beat them.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I completely agree.
Yeah, well, I think that Book and Jerkovic will compete this week. I think they're going to open that up a bit. So Book will get pressed during practice this week. So I think he's going to be well aware of what the situation is Saturday. And I think he will respond, though. I really do. I think he's better than what he showed Saturday night. And I think the rain affected him, and I think he's going to respond. So
how did you play the week after those four interceptions in the rain?
Tell me about it. So the only good news is,
did you bounce back after that, or did you, or was that your last game?
Yeah, so that was the last game of the season. So it was against Washington. Washington was clearly not as good as us. We did end up winning the game. I did throw a touchdown pass at the end of the game to win it. And it was because I got pissed at myself. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe we're going to lose to these guys, because I'm just such a wuss. And then we finally drove it down the field and scored. But the very next game was our first playoff game. I think we won 35-7, and then we lost our second game in the playoffs. But it was just one of those things where I think that, you know, as a quarterback, the wind, even I didn't even like playing in really windy games. You know, I wanted everything to be perfect.
Well, what did Patterson do? Throw the ball twice in the first half. I mean, that was the difference.
I think they were 24-27 running the football.
They put 17 points on the board without even having to throw the ball.
Exactly. And, I mean, when you're doing that, and you know, I don't want to beat up on players, but Gillum, I mean, my God, it wasn't even close. He didn't even turn his head. He just went right into the receiver and just, like, committed interference just for the sake of committing interference. And that was a huge play. Yeah. I mean, that really set the tone that, all right, they got us on our heels. We don't know what's coming. I don't know. I mean, it's little stuff like that just builds on itself. And, I mean, you're playing in those conditions, and it's like, holy crap, it just goes downhill quick. But I don't know. We'll see. Let's hope that at the end of the year we can look back and say, you know what, that was the one game that got away from us.
Well, shoot, I'd rather go 2-10 and beat Michigan than 10-2. So, you know, I think
people with a white hot hate.
Well, yeah, you know, we had two games this year that were measuring sticks, and you know, the first one, again, we there were a lot of issues in that game in terms of the way we played. We had a chance at the end, but there was a lot of execution issues in that game. And then this one, we didn't even show up. So, you know, however you want to frame it, to me, you know, this season, regardless of the outcome, will be sort of defined by those two games.
All right, good deal. We'll leave
it
there. You've been
listening. Predictions or?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I think the Irish do win. I'm going to go so far as to say I think it's going to be 38-20. What do you think, Coffee?
Well, I'm thinking 24-17. I'm not as sanguine about their recovery ability from what happened last week.
Yeah, I think it's going to be uncomfortably close too, but I'll say Notre Dame wins 30-28.
Ooh, that's closer than me.
Right. At least we're all saying we're winning. We're not throwing the towel in.
We were all wrong last week, so what the hell?
That's true. All right, we'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic and Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.